Live across Kansas on the Game Day Radio Network and worldwide at PowerCatGameDay.com. K-State fans, it's time.
He's at the 40 near side, to the 30, to the 25, to the 20. He may go. 10-5, Wildcat touchdown, Phillip Brooks. Surveys, gets the snap. It's a little bit high. Under pressure, sack. There's another sack, and it's Jerron McPherson back at the 37-yard line.
Wildcat Nation, welcome to Power Cat Game Day.
Shoots it over the middle, and this is Sammy Wheeler at the 10 to the 5. Touchdown, Wildcats! Sammy Wheeler is in there for the score, and K-State with 52 seconds to go in the first half.
Power Cat Game Day is powered by
Prairie Land Partners, your local John Deere dealer with 15 locations throughout Kansas, and Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center. Get back in the game with the same doctors trusted by Kansas State, online at kansasortho.com.
The biggest pregame show in the Big 12 starts now. Wildcat fans, this is Powercat Game Day.
Well, things went about as well as they possibly could have in Arlington for K-State against Stanford as the Wildcats knock off the Cardinal 24-7 in front of almost 30,000 K-State fans that made the trip to the DFW Metroplex for the game. And now, Wildcats turn around for a much different test. Can you focus and lock in on an FCS team? Southern Illinois coming into Manhattan today, a top 10 team in FCS and a team that will play a much different style of football than what K-State saw in Stanford. Welcome into Powercat Game Day. I am John Kurtz. The show is brought to you by Prairie Land Partners and the Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center. And I am joined, as always, by Derek Young from K-State Online and Cole Manbeck. Boys, it was a very, very fun weekend in Arlington to watch K-State go out and smack Stanford in a game that, frankly, was not as close as the final score indicated. K-State probably should have won that game by more than 17, Cole, but still a blast, still a great showing. The defense showed out and played very, very well in front of a really rowdy, raucous, fun crowd.
I don't think you could have asked for much more than what K-State did in this game, John. And, you know, I think the biggest question mark, at least I had, was the defensive side of the football. I think we thought the offense, with so much returning experience and the front up front, especially on the offensive line, a six-year quarterback in Skylar Thompson, depth in the backfield, I think we thought the offense would be okay. But, you know, my biggest concern was the linebacker position going up against a Stanford team that's going to line up and run power football. And Kansas State's defense showed out. I mean, they were phenomenal. I mean, you would have told me going into the game, K-State would hold Stanford to 1.8 yards per carry and 39 yards per rush. I would not have believed you, even though Stanford hasn't run the ball nearly at the same level as they used to over the last couple of years. You know, the 1.8 yards per rush, the 39 yards, that's the lowest of the Chris Klieman era since he became the K-State coach for the defensive side of the football over 24 games. So, I mean, the defense was rock solid. They were flying around. And, you know, we talked about it. Derek, credit to Derek. I mean, he talked about this in the spring and was really, I think, the first to report on it, that Kansas State was going to go to, you know, tinkering with a three-man front defense and 3-3-5 look. And they threw a curveball at Stanford. I don't know if Stanford expected that. And that 3-3-5 dominated.
Yeah, I guess my takeaway is probably different than my immediate one. I felt very much like everyone else that the defense overachieved and the offense underachieved immediately after the football game. And when you dig a little deeper or think about, you know, what we saw a little bit more in depth, I kind of come back to the middle a little bit on both. I think the defense looked good, obviously, and still overachieved by what our expectations were, but I don't think they're as good as what we saw. So I'm going to reel everyone in a little bit on that front. I think you feel very good about what you saw out of the linebacker position, though, and that'll never change, and especially Daniel Green. But I think there was probably more plays to be made by Stanford, but in the passing game, not the run game, that probably make you feel a little uneasy going forward, especially playing a pass-heavy attack from Southern Illinois. Offensively, you know, you see the 24 points on the board and how they weren't sharp, and you probably don't feel good about what you saw, whether it be, you know, Skylar Thompson's inconsistent accuracy at times or the offensive line coming a little bit off the rails in the third quarter. But you also got to remember and keep in perspective with the offense, they left 14 or 17 points on the board as well.
Yeah, they did. They definitely did. I think anybody to a man on the offense would admit that after the game. But the person that I would single out as having a tremendous week one, actually, is Courtney Messingham, Derek, with the game that he called. I mean, a lot of the issues, as you said, were some inconsistency at quarterback. There were some drops mixed in there as well. But, man, it felt like, as the kids would say, he was really in his bag, man. I mean, he was on fire. And I know you and I are people who have been higher on Courtney Messingham than a lot of the fan base seems to have been throughout a lot of his tenure. But I thought that was one of his more impressive performances.
Yeah, I've always been a pretty big supporter, defender of Courtney Messingham. When you really only have one dynamic weapon on the offensive side of the ball, it being Deuce Vaughn, really the only one that defenses typically have to be threatened or scared about, then it's hard to make that guy a dynamite player week in and week out. But, and obviously Deuce Vaughn deserves credit. We've shared and had conversations about that before, but Courtney Messingham shows how good of an offensive coordinator he is by still you know, presenting Deuce Vaughn with plenty of opportunities to be dynamic and explosive every week. And it shows just how good he was against Stanford, because we're sitting here talking about, you know, a 17-point win where they scored 24 points on probably an average to maybe slightly above average defense, where they could have easily scored 38, 42 points. And a lot of that is because of Courtney Messingham and the stuff that they called that really worked. The only drawback I really have with the offense was, you know, another rocky third quarter, which has been reflective of Courtney Messingham offenses since he's been in Manhattan. But I thought he really dialed up a really good game.
Yeah, and one of the questions coming out of this, I was asked this multiple times in the immediate aftermath of the game, Cole, is, hey, does this say more about Stanford than K-State? And look, if you want the true answer to that, I think it says more about Stanford than it does K-State. They were projected with an over-under of 3.5 from Vegas at the beginning of the year, and that really raised an eyebrow from me, but I can see it now. They clearly have issues at quarterback. They left a lot out there. They didn't take advantage of some plays that were there. But it doesn't really matter too much, because I don't know, to me it feels a lot like the 2019 Mississippi State win that Chris Klieman got, where there were questions there too, like, okay, is this Mississippi State team actually that good? And it turns out they were not a great team, but K-State still went on to have an 8-win season, and I feel very similarly about this game. Even if Stanford is not a great team, to go out and dominate a team that does have a pulse and has Power 5 talent, obviously, and maybe even greater than your average Power 5 talent at Stanford, I think that matters whether or not Stanford is going to be a good team this year or not.
Yeah, I don't get too much into the weeds on that. I don't worry so much about what Stanford's end record is going to be and how good they necessarily are. I don't want to overreact too much to DY's point, you know, to the first game of the season, overreaction week one. That happens often, especially in the betting world as well. People overreact to what transpires in that first week. But, you know, to me, Stanford, we talked about the recruiting profile, just for example, last week's show. You know, Stanford has, in the 2017-2021 recruiting class, they drew in 55 recruits that were ranked a 5.7 three-star or higher, which is the highest three-star you can be. They had 26 four-stars. You know, 4 or 5-star kids. Yeah, they have talent on the roster. David Shaw has historically been a good coach until the last couple of years. His program has, you know, not nearly been at the same level. But, you know, you're still opening up against a Power 5 football team. And if you want to knock it, I mean, look back to what happened at Vanderbilt in 2017. That's a worse team probably than what Kansas State saw against Stanford. And we know what happened against Vanderbilt in Nashville, which was, you know, basically a home game for Kansas State. So it doesn't matter who you're playing. You go out and beat a Power 5 team and you dominate in the way you did. I don't get caught up in, you know, how good Stanford is necessarily. I think K-State looked athletic. I think they flew around to the football, and I think that showed out more so, you know, no matter who the opponent is. So I feel good about the win. I don't know how anyone could complain about it really at this point, other than there are some concerns that can be fixed. That happened in the game, and DY pointed it out. There were guys open over the middle of the field for Stanford that they weren't able to hit. Their tight ends were open a few times, and good teams in the Big 12 are going to be able to exploit that. So K-State has some things to fix. They're not perfect by any means, but I think it's all fixable, and they're just going to continue to get better.
Now the challenge becomes, can you refocus and dial in for an FCS team coming into the house? And look, if Chris Klieman has anything to do with it, you're never going to have a K-State team overlook an FCS team with this coaching staff full of coaches who obviously made their name at the FCS level. And we heard, DY, the list of talking points at the press conferences this week. Southern Illinois, top 10 team, a team that Kleiman thinks can contend for the national championship in FCS. They have a quarterback who threw for almost 500 yards in the first game of the season. They will run a lot of gadget plays, reverses, etc., and they are very experienced. They have upwards of 16 or 17 sixth-year seniors, these super seniors, in COVID times now playing on their roster. So this is a game that is it is tricky, trickier than the name value at least would appear on paper.
Yeah, and some of the people, and I feel comfortable with my sources on a week-to-week level to kind of get a gauge of how they view the opponent too. And I don't think it's just window dressing. I think they have a lot of respect for what Southern Illinois is going to be able to do, how effective they are, how good of a program they are, and just how good of a team they are. I don't think what we heard this week has been window dressing. Chris Kleiman called them a national title contender at the FCS level. I think when you're ranked number 8, and probably one of the top 3 or 4 Missouri Valley Conference teams, that's probably the appropriate approach and the right answer on that. I think they are a national title contender. And I almost get the sense, and I don't want to like overstep my boundaries here, but I almost get the sense that they may think that Southern Illinois is actually a bit better than Stanford. So we'll see if that comes true. It might be, it might not, but I think that's at least how they are approaching it and what they believe. And look, if the culture has improved as much as they say it has, and if they're mature and as unselfish as they say they are, then, you know, overlooking this team should not be an issue.
Yeah, honestly, I like hearing that they think this team is better than Stanford, because that's the way that you need to approach this kind of a game. And really, K-State's next two, these last two non-conference games are both very tricky. Nevada is coming up next week. They beat Cal in week one. They're flirting with the top 25 right now, as are the Wildcats, who are receiving votes in both polls this week. We'll head to our first break on Powercat Game Day, but when we come back, we will get the Wildcat Weekend sound, and you'll hear from Phillip Brooks, one of the Wildcats who is taking on a bigger role in the wide receiver core and obviously is a special teams dynamo as well. You're listening to Powercat Game Day, brought to you by Prairie Land Partners and the Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center.
K-State fans, this is Powercat Game Day.
Every body is different. Some get injured and others wear down. At Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center, your unique condition is at the center of what we do. Locally owned, OSMC is all-inclusive, featuring state-of-the-art equipment and treatment from diagnosis through surgery, physical therapy, and a return to activity to get you back to an active and pain-free life. Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center, the same doctors trusted by Kansas State University. The greatest comebacks begin here. More information at kansasortho.com.
Affordable without compromise. That's not easy to come by when shopping for a compact utility tractor, unless you make a visit to Prairie Land Partners John Deere, where you'll find a high-performance machine at a reasonable price. Like the 1E, perfect for small property owners. Stop by any of their 15 locations or visit them online at prairielandpartners.com.
Delivering the right solution. Prairie Land Partners.
The Powercat Game Day Forecast.
It's brought to you by Al Langton Insurance. Feel like family, not just a number. Call Al Langton Insurance for home, auto, renters, and business insurance. They know insurance, so you don't have to. All right, the forecast today, it is very hot, people. Very, very hot. Sunny and hot with a high near 97. Southwest wind at 5 to 15 miles an hour. Can gust up to 25, so we'll have a little bit of wind in there. But, man, after the middle of the week got a little bit nice and cool. You got a taste of some fall weather. It's turning right back into summer for this game. So that is the best that I can give you. It is very hot. Make sure that if you're somebody like me, I suppose you should have the appropriate amount of sunscreen on so that you don't get a crazy sunburn, all right? That's a word of advice from John to all of you if you're heading out to the game today. Welcome back here on Powercat Game Day. John Kurtz, Derek Young from K-State Online, Cole Manbeck, the crew here with you once again. We're going to hear from Phillip Brooks later on this segment, a guy who's heavily involved with the offense now in addition to his role on special teams as an All-Big 12 performer there. But first, let's get a taste of what everybody had to say this week, both after the game, after knocking around Stanford and Jerry World, and then heading into this game against Southern Illinois with the Wildcat Week in sound.
This is the Wildcat Week in sound.
Let's go!
Looking out there and seeing our families, everybody who made the trip to come see us and spend time with us. You know, I had probably had 30 or 40 people there for me today, making the trip down, you know, and just means a lot, you know.
First and goal for the Wildcats. Thompson keeps, and he is in. Skylar Thompson's 23rd career rushing touchdown is the first score of the season for the Wildcats. And they hand to Bonna, third and 13, and he's got a first, and he is headed all the way to Pater. Game breaker, 59-yard touchdown score, Deuce Vaughn.
The coaches all throughout the week, we had seen that look whenever it was a third and long. They would really be in a really soft coverage to the point where they kind of drop everybody outside too, just kind of like drop back into like a zone to the point where you can't get to the outside or anything like that. So left the open in the middle, and then whenever you get through, it's kind of one-on-one with the safety.
I've been working on that for 8 months, and it was no secret we needed to be better on defense this year, and we worked both our four down and our three down the entire spring and just kind of learned the three down from some people that I'm pretty close to in the profession.
We definitely came super far. We got a lot more players going to fly around. We communicate way more. You know, I mean, everything's just different. We trust our coaches. We do what they say, and then everything just falls in place for us. We go out there and play.
I've talked to Matt Campbell about it. I think Iowa State knows how good Northern Iowa is year in and year out. We watched Washington. I thought Washington was a phenomenal team playing Stanford, and Montana found a way to beat those guys. Those things aren't flukes. It's not a fluke to beat a Power 5 team. Those are good football teams, and we're going to face another one that's got 16 six-year guys, a bunch of guys that have played a lot of football there, and they have confidence in what they're doing, and they're well-coached.
I know that Southern Illinois knows that, you know, they can win this game, and they think that, and you know, for them, it might be their Super Bowl, but for me and for our team, it's the biggest game we've played up to this point, so we're not overlooking them.
Tremendous skill on offense, really good quarterback, probably the best reverse team in the country. You're going to see some reverses out of different formations, gadgets and wildcat, and they make you defend sideline to sideline with everybody. You better not just key on a couple of guys. They've got some tremendous players, but they hit reverses on everybody.
We're excited to play, and yeah, definitely Arkansas State is in the back of my head, and I'm ready to go.
All right, there is the Wildcat Week in sound as we're back here on Powercat Game Day. John Kurtz, Derek Young, and Cole Manbeck. And we talked just a little bit about this in the open. You heard a little bit about it there from Chris Klieman explaining the breakdown of the new defense that K-State unveiled. But a three-man front, Derek, for K-State, that is something that Chris Klieman says is 8 months in the making. They determined in the offseason they needed to be better defensively, and they decided to use this as a wrinkle, which everybody stresses will not necessarily be the norm throughout the rest of the year. They can go back to the four-man and the 4-2-5, more conventional, certainly from what we've seen out of K-State. But it's hard to argue with the results in week one, at least, of how that defense played.
Yeah, and I think we will see both of those different schemes. I think we'll see the 3-3-5. I think we'll see the 4-2-5. And you'll probably see both in just about every game, perhaps every game. The funny thing is we're talking about the effectiveness of the 3-3-5 and how it worked against Stanford, and it's actually not supposed to be geared towards Stanford, right? Like, yeah. The 3-3-5 that they implemented is technically to stop the RPO offenses, which Stanford is not. They're a drop-back, play-action, kind of boxy kind of offense. So the three-man front was never meant for Stanford, but they got caught in a three-man front, I think Chris Klieman said, or on Tuesday when we spoke to him a few times, and it just kept working. So they're like, you know, the heck with it, we'll just stick with it. So they ended up running a lot more odd fronts against Stanford than they were anticipating, because I do think, you know, when they generated and kind of configured that offense during the spring, it was actually meant for more of the, you know, the Oklahomas on the schedule, the Oklahoma States, the Texas Techs, so to speak.
Well, because the basic idea there, you're going to have an extra linebacker, an extra defensive back, like more speed and athleticism out there on the field as opposed to another lineman. So, yeah, you can understand why that would be more conducive to defending some of these spread offenses. And look, a part of the reason that it looked as good as it did, Cole, is the play of Daniel Green, who is somebody I know Derek's pointed out many a time in the offseason as important to this team as virtually anybody on the roster because of how dire straits linebacker appeared to be in. And man, early returns were very good. Joe Klannerman talked at his press conference this week about the effort that he used, some effort plays to track down 11-yard gains down the field and kept them from being 20, 30, 40-yard gains, etc. But he did look fast. He looked fast, and this is a kid that's a former four-star recruit, so you know the pedigree is there. That was an encouraging performance for sure.
You know, there was a play when I rewatched the game where he was brought on a blitz, and he didn't get there, and he tracked down a play from behind 15 yards downfield and tackled the receiver from behind. Yeah, that shows the type of effort he played with, And he's obviously got talent. I mean, you mentioned it, John. He's a four-star kid out of high school. He was number 10 linebacker recruit in the country. And he feels like he's been around forever, talked about forever, because he was in the 2017 recruiting class, but didn't get to campus for another year, then qualified. And so now he's still just a junior, but the pedigree is there. And, you know, he's 6'3", 230 pounds. You know, coming out of high school, the kid looked like a star, but it took some time to learn the system, you know, for the game to slow down for him. And now he's taken that next step and really looks to be a leader on the defensive side of the football and one of Kansas State's best defensive players. And as D-Wide, you talked about, I mean, Kansas State is going to need him desperately because the linebacker position is probably the thinnest group on the defense. They need a guy to stand out there. They need Daniel Green to be an all Big 12 type performer. And he showed that on Saturday. Not, you know, it's going to be a different scheme that he has to go up against in the Big 12 with more spread offenses and have to drop back into coverage more. But against a power running team like Stanford, you know, he flew around. He played great. He played with energy and effort. And I think Kansas State has a rising star in Green, and hopefully he can keep it going.
And keep in mind, unfortunately, he will have to sit out the first half of this game today against Southern Illinois because of the targeting ejection in the second half against Stanford, which it's a tough break. It's a bang-bang play where the receiver, the guy with the ball, is lowering his head at the same time Daniel Green's going in for the hit. That was basically the way Joe Klannerman and Chris Kleiman both explained it. Nothing that they're mad at him for. It wasn't anything malicious, but that's the way the game is. That's the way the rules are set up these days. And so he will be out for the first half, which definitely does hurt. Now, from one area of weakness on the defensive side of the ball to the offensive side of the ball, receiver was an area where we honed in and said, all right, there are some major question marks here. We didn't see a ton from Malik Knowles in the passing game, but he did help out in the running game with getting the ball in some end-arounds and starting in the backfield. Derek, what did you think of K-State's receivers overall, including, obviously, Malik in game one?
It's kind of the trend, probably, when we're going to discuss the offense, just because I don't think we saw enough. There was only 45 plays. They threw it less than 20 times. One of them was a pass interference, a few balls that weren't exactly thrown super well by Skylar Thompson. So incomplete, that's the grade, right? Like, I don't know that you can come away thrilled with their performance, but there's also not enough negative there to be overly concerned either. So I think it's still a work in progress. You'd like to have Shabastin Taylor back at some point. Cordy Meskin did say that he probably could have played last week, and they meant to, but there were so few plays that, you know, when the time came, when they would have threw him out of the field, it was the end of the game. And he's not really an inexperienced player that just needs reps for reps at that point. So there was no point. So I imagine maybe we do see him at some point against Southern Illinois. Certainly seems like that's Courtney Messingham's plan. But I don't think we saw enough opportunities or, you know, situations for the wide receivers to really prove us one way or another.
Well, Phillip Brooks is one of those receivers. He did get involved, had a big catch early in the game when Stanford basically just let him go down the field, and we're about to hear from him right now in our player interview today, which is brought to you by Manhattan Regional Airport. Fly safe, fly local, fly MHK. Book your flight today at flymhk.com. Speaking of the offense, Phillip Brooks made an interesting point when he was being asked about his game against Stanford. He was very happy to see the fact that they actually got a decent amount of man coverage from Stanford as opposed to a lot of zone last year.
I feel like last year we didn't get as much man. We had a lot of zone, you know. Especially on the stage, it was nice, you know, just to go against man. We would go against man all the time in practice, so it was really nothing new for us, but it was nice during the game and it worked out for us.
Were you in kind of a scramble mode route-wise when Skylar found you down the sideline?
Yeah, kind of. Scramble at the last second. Like, they really just cut me loose, you know, mid-route. So I was open. I think he was looking, you know, the other side. And then he was like, oh, wow, he's wide open. So might as well throw him the ball. So that's all that happened on that play.
Originally running an over-the-top route, or what was it?
Yeah, it was a little post. Post route, and he just cut me loose. So,
I guess how big was that?
Well, what do you think you guys did best offensively in week one?
We were very efficient. Like, we only had 45 plays on offense the whole game, 24 at halftime. So I thought we were very efficient in what we were doing. You know what I'm saying? Moved the ball well, ran the ball well. So, yeah, I thought we were very efficient. I had to give you an answer.
How much do you feel like your role has changed this year? Like, I know Malik was talking about being kind of a leader in the receiver room. Like, how much do you feel a responsibility for that this year, being one of the older guys?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I've always been the younger guy, you know what I mean? So this is my first time being an older guy. And, you know, having the younger guys look up to you and, you know, showing, leading by example, that's what I do. I'm not really a rah-rah guy, so I try to lead by example. And, yeah, this is a new role, but I'm embracing it. So,
how motivated are you guys as a receiver room to kind of prove that you guys are legit this year?
No, I'm very motivated. The guy told me out there, like, 7th in the Big 12, which is crazy. Because, like, well, I'm kind of used to it, though, because we've always been kind of underdog. I've always been kind of an underdog, so I always have to prove people wrong, you know, every year. So it's nothing new for me, to be honest.
Now, are you ready to kind of cut it loose on punt returns this week?
It was like last week I got kind of loose a little bit, you know, got some penalties here and there. So looking to clean that up. Yeah, I'm excited. I feel like we can get a good return this game. You know, I think I can return the ball every game, but that's just my mindset on it. But, yeah, I'm excited this week for the game, especially hometown, home crowd, you know, sold out and everything. So I'm excited.
What's the first thing that goes through your mind after catching the punt? You know you've got it. Your next step is what?
Next step is to see who's on you because they come down real quick. I think, actually, the hardest part of punt return is catching the ball. Mm-hmm. I feel like once you catch the ball, it's just natural instincts, reading, you know, things I've been doing, like, I feel like all my life playing football. And so I feel like catching it is the hardest part. And then after that, it's just natural for me.
How difficult is it? Focus on catching, and you can hear them coming at you, probably.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's just instincts, you know, natural reaction. You know, trusting. I trust my team a lot, you know, blocking. I think they block very well for me. And, yeah, I mean, just basically just, you know, trusting in them that they have my back like I got theirs, like, you know.
How much work does it take to get to the point where you're confident in catching the ball every time in traffic like that over the years?
It took me – it actually didn't take too long. I think it took me probably, like, my very, like, true freshman year. That's when I, like, first started playing and catching the ball. Like, I dropped, like, two – punts, I think, in a Bowling Green game or something like that, and I think that was like the worst I felt. But like, other than that, I feel pretty confident, like catching the ball and, you know, this and that. After that first couple drops I had, so I know what it's like. Well, I know what it feels like to drop the ball, so it's not nothing I can handle.
I'd appreciate Phillip Brooks there. That is our player interview today here on Powercat Game Day. Later on, you're going to hear from Joe Klannerman, K-State's defensive coordinator, on just how in-depth everything went on that switch to the three-man front that K-State utilized for much of the Stanford game. But when we come back on Powercat Game Day, we'll look into the series history between K-State and Southern Illinois, and we'll talk Skylar Thompson. Always seems to be polarizing, and that performance in Week 1 was another polarizing performance. We'll break it down coming up next on Powercat Game Day.
This is Powercat Game Day.
Sarah Evans.
Baby, giving you my heart.
Copy that to her. Sarah Evans, live, September 16th, McCain Auditorium, Kansas State University. Check out the new album, Copy That, out now. Tickets on sale now at mccain.k-state.edu. Don't miss one of country music's top female performers, Sarah Evans.
Hey everybody, it's Brad with Vanderbilt's. With guaranteed lowest prices and over 9,000 boots and shoes in stock, you're sure to find the boots you need for the job you do. We carry all the major brands like Ariat, Tony Lama, Timberland, Wolverine, and many more. We even stock Hey Dudes. Need scrubs? We've got them. Vanderbilt's also stocks over 3,000 pairs of jeans every day. So stop in today for the best prices, service, and selection. We're conveniently located in downtown Wamego.
You work boots and a Vanderbilt.
Powercat Game Day continues hour one as we take you up to K-State and Southern Illinois pregame coverage, which will start from the K-State Sports Network at 4 o'clock and the kickoff at 6 o'clock at Bill Snyder Family Stadium tonight. John Kurtz with Cole Manbeck and Derek Young of K-State Online. We're going to talk some Skylar Thompson here in just a second. Typically a pretty polarizing topic there, and his performance in Week 1 certainly is another example of how people can look at the same thing and see something very different. First, though, we are trying to give the proper respect here on this show to Southern Illinois, a top 10 team in FCS and a potential FCS national championship contender. This is actually the first meeting ever between K-State and Southern Illinois. Can tell you that the Wildcats are 15-4 all time against the Missouri Valley Conference, which is a tremendous football conference these days in FCS, and had a lot of success in week one, where you saw six FCS teams upset FBS teams, including the Washington Huskies going down to Montana, which was a ranked team that went down to an FCS opponent. So do not overlook Southern Illinois today. And I'll pass this along as well. I'm not sure if you guys had thought of this, but Mitch Holtis, I was talking to Mitch Holtis earlier this week, and he started off by saying, hey, you have your tickets to the Bruce Weber Bowl, and then followed it up with, hey, do you have your tickets to the Chris Lowry Bowl? Both Bruce Weber and Chris Lowry, guys that have rolled through Southern Illinois. So I'm interested how much attention the basketball team will be paying here today to this game. All right. Don't everybody jump in all at once here on K-State Hoops. You guys not excited about K-State Hoops? You don't care about Bruce Weber and Chris Lowry? What was that?
We're locked in on football right now, John.
Man. All right. Well, when Marquise Noel goes off during the hoop season, I'll be the only one enjoying it and soaking it up, and you guys can just be watching. I don't know whatever it is you're going to watch. Just watch the Jayhawks or something.
I do know the coaches will be there because they're hosting basketball recruits this weekend as well.
Okay, all right, there we go. See, that would have been a perfect response before you left me with 7 seconds of silence there, Derek. That would have been great the first time around, but that's okay. It's okay. I'll forgive you. Okay, well, let's get to a topic that everybody here seems to know a little bit better. That is football. K-State played 57 different players in the game in the first half alone on Saturday, which it's funny. I talked DY to Aaron Lockett and this with the podcast that I do with him every week, Lock It Up with Kurtz, which, by the way, shameless plug, you can find on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. But he has this mentality of, like, it's hard. I can tell it's hard for him because he wants to, he's like, I want to be the guy. I want to be out there on the field all the time. I want to be playing. But I like the philosophy that K-State has utilized here with all of this. We've really seen it throughout Klieman's entire tenure in Manhattan to try and keep guys fresh. And it helps allow younger players to play and can develop some better depth. Were you surprised, though, that it got all the way up to 57 players that were used?
Maybe the amount doesn't surprise me. Maybe the frequency is what surprises me. And how much it extended throughout the entire team. Because, right, we were a little bit stunned year one, first game, Chris Klieman, I think they were playing nickels, right? And we see these line changes on the offensive side of the ball, and, you know, it's like every play, like in and out, maybe not the offensive line or quarterback, but every other position, there's just guys coming in and out on every single play. We didn't see that on the defense. I think we saw it maybe from possession to possession, but we didn't see it play after play. Against Stanford, it was play after play. So that kind of stunned me, the frequency of that, especially with the secondary. You're basically retooling your secondary almost every snap. I think we expect that with the defensive line. I think every team pretty much does that too. But, yeah, it took some getting used to on the defensive side of the ball because I don't know that I've seen that, especially in a game that was – you know, probably not one where the players are really sucking air, right? Not a lot of plays. I think there was average about 34 to 36 seconds in between plays on both sides of the ball. So it's not a game that was particularly taxing for anyone. And to your point, I spoke with a couple former Kansas State football players as well, one being Zach Dials, and they were, you know, it took him aback too. I think he definitely like honed in on the corners, and he was shocked that they would be, you know, rotating cornerbacks as frequently as they did within a drive.
I think I counted 11 or 12 secondary players that played between the safety and corner position, DY, in that game. I mean, it was constant rotations, and all of them made plays. I mean, you look at T. Denson with the tackle for loss showing out. You know, Justin Gardner had a couple of nice plays. Sincere Mason came in and made a couple tackles, a transfer from Kennesaw State. And then we see Reggie Stubblefield. It just felt like a different guy making a play throughout the game, and especially on the back end. I think that's going to be big against Big 12 offenses that love to go hurry up. You know, you get worn down quicker to be able to rotate fresh secondary guys in when you have the opportunity. It's going to be a big benefit for this football team.
Well, Skylar Thompson, a quarterback, had a game that I think was very up and down. I think it's fair. Most people would characterize it as up and down against Stanford. Two rushing touchdowns, looked great running the football, and knocked over a guy at the goal line on a very impressive touchdown run, which was an emotional moment for him getting back out there after being injured in game three last year, but missed on some deep balls, missed Daniel Amaterbebe on one that probably could have been a touchdown. He threw the interception in the end zone where he didn't, to be fair, get a lot of help from Phillip Brooks on that, but still a pick nonetheless. DY, when you went back and evaluated, did it change any of your perspective on Skyler's performance, and how did he grade out to you?
I don't know if it changed it. I would say I just get frustrated sometimes watching Skyler Thompson, I guess, because he makes some plays where you just kind of go, wow, sometimes. I mean, the throw to Phillip Brooks where he really turned upfield, that wasn't an easy throw. The rollout to the right where he hit Daniel Imanarbebe in stride as they're both going to the right. There's only one ball where that can be, and he connected on it, and it was also a pretty good grab. And then it's the simpler throws that sometimes aren't executed, which kind of makes me pull out my hair. So I guess if he really could just, you know, like hone in on the simple things, then, you know, he's not just an above average quarterback in the Big 12. He's a pretty good one. So I think that's where my frustrations lie, that it's like the little things that I think that he should be able to execute because of the better things that he does connect on when he is performing at a top level. So he's just wildly inconsistent. He's had a wildly inconsistent career, and this was another wildly inconsistent game within it.
I think it's a good point, DY, because you see the potential there, you know, in many games with Skyler Thompson, and the fact that, you know, he makes some throws that are extremely challenging. He puts them right on the money, and then at times he misses some of the more simple throws. And yeah, I think the biggest knock I obviously have is the decision to throw the ball to Phillip Brooks in the end zone and get greedy there when K-State was in such a rhythm offensively and just marching right down the field and, you know, picking up chunk play after chunk play, and you're in second and four, the short throws there, and, you know, they end up going deep to Phillip Brooks. Now, the throw in itself was probably okay. It's just you got to know who you're throwing the ball to there, and, you know, a 5'7" Phillip Brooks is not the guy to target. So it's just a poor decision. And that's my biggest knock on him in the game. But again, not a ton of opportunities to judge Skyler Thompson when they only threw the ball 14 times, you know, with a couple sacks mixed in. So, you know, hopefully a little bit of the rust is knocked off now, and he gets in a groove as he comes back from that surgery.
In defense of Skyler Thompson, when it comes to the offensive line, I thought where they were the most poor at was probably pass protection. So he didn't exactly have a clean day back there in the pocket. But I'll also go another angle here with Skyler Thompson. And it's probably not going to get fixed at this point because he's in his sixth year. But I don't know that I could – I probably only need one hand to count how many times when he's rushed by the defense where he scrambles to the left. It's always to the right. And when you're a defense and when you know that, it's pretty easy to know how to attack an offensive line when you don't have to worry about him going one particular direction.
Yeah, and to your point there, Courtney Messingham – asked about the offensive line this week, said, yeah, pass protection, we need to be better. And he said the running game was where he felt like the offensive line was better in terms of how they performed. So there's a lot in that. And I would also suggest, too, now, Skyler and Chris Klieman all did not want to entertain any idea of rust having to be knocked off going into the game, which I understand as a competitor and as a coach, like you don't want to be talking about that necessarily. But I think there had to be some getting out there at game speed for the first time. Courtney Messingham actually admitted that after the game when he spoke earlier this week that, yeah, there probably was some for getting into a game speed, live action, bullets are flying situation for the first time since week 3 of last year. So we'll see. This should be a game where there is more available to Skyler, and hopefully the offense and the passing game will be reflective of that. All right, one final segment here in the first hour of Powercat Game Day. We are going to get Robert's World and hit the Big 12 huddle, and when we say the Big 12 huddle, that means the new-look Big 12 huddle, because the Big 12 now has 4 new members. We'll talk about what all that looks like and what it means for the league coming up next.
Follow us on Twitter at Powercat Game Day and join us in the pregame conversation. Powercat Game Day continues next.
Versatility with an unexpected low price. The 3E compact utility tractor at Prairie Land Partners John Deere packs the horsepower landscape professionals need to mow, grade, haul, and load. Not to mention quality, reliability, and a great low price. Stop by any of their 15 locations or visit them online at prairielandpartners.com.
Delivering the right solution. Prairie Land Partners.
The doctors at Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center have been the K-State Wildcats' trusted team physicians for almost 40 years. The skilled and professional staff at OSMC are available for all of your orthopedic needs. Located at 1600 Charles Place, we offer complete orthopedic care from diagnosis, surgery, physical therapy, fall prevention, and return to activity to get you back to your active lifestyle. Visit us online at KansasOrtho.com. Orthopedic and Sports Medicine Center. The greatest comebacks begin here.
All right, back here on Powercat Game Day, John Kurtz, Cole Manbeck, and Derek Young all with you ahead of K-State and Southern Illinois. We'll get to Robert's World in just a moment. First, though, it is the Big 12 Huddle, which is brought to you by Vanderbilt's, your work boot center, locally owned with 9 locations across Kansas, online at Vanderbilt's.com.
The Big 12 Huddle. Powercat Game Day's experts around the Big 12 Conference.
And the Big 12 Huddle today is all reserved for the new look conference. 4 new members added this week: BYU, Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF. All now members of the Big 12 Conference, which I think is very exciting and can give everybody a little bit of a sigh of relief, is kind of how I feel about it, Derek. At this point, it's probably not a conference that is going to net you as much money as you're making right now, granted, with Texas and Oklahoma, but the reports on that are looking like it may not be nearly as bad as we all once feared, and now you at least have 4 schools that I would submit to you are the best of the rest, the best of the group of 5 / independents that you could have gone and poached.
I don't disagree. It's one of those "we're not dead yet" moments. Like, I think there was some doom and gloom, like, oh, you know, this is completely falling apart, everything's bad, nothing's going to be good ever again. Are some of these schools, is the entire league still in borrowed time to an extent, a little bit? We'll see. I mean, the college football world seems to change on a dime pretty significantly every 10 years. But it's one of those we're not dead yet moments where I think they can patch something together in half that'll keep it together and respectable for at least 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 more years. And a good thing, too, a little wrinkle here, is BYU has a chance to beat the second Pac-12 team in as many weeks. So it's like twisting that knife, since the Pac-12 wasn't very receptive.
Yeah, I think it's the best case scenario that Kansas State could have hoped for once OU and Texas left, next to the Pac-12 taking all 8, right? But that wasn't going to happen. The Pac-12 was going to take all 8. And so when the Pac-12 decided not to expand, I thought that was for the best, because the worst thing that could have happened is Oklahoma State, Texas Tech getting poached, this thing just completely falling apart and everyone going out on their own. And so the fact that, you know, the Pac-12 didn't expand, the Big 12's adding the top 4, and they're doing it quickly. That's the big thing to me, that we're going to have answers. We have answers now already. You didn't want to have to be answering questions to recruits on a year from now, where everything's going to be, who's going to be in your league, are you going to fall apart? You know, is KU going to the Big 10, which was laughable to begin with. And, you know, so now you can answer those questions. You get major television markets added. You get top quality football programs over the last several years. UCF has won 2 New Year's Six Bowls in the last 6 years. Houston won a New Year's Six Bowl against Florida State, the Sugar Bowl, just a few years ago. And BYU's a national brand, and Cincinnati's a top 10 football program the last 2 years. So this is quality football, major television markets. I think it's great for the Big 12.
And you bring up, Cole, the fact that it came together so quickly. Thursday of this past week marked the 50-day mark since the Texas and Oklahoma report first surfaced. We're not talking about Texas and Oklahoma becoming official. We're talking about the bombshell report from the Houston Chronicle that Texas and Oklahoma were going to leave. And within 2 weeks of the Pac-12 saying that they were not going to expand, Bob Bowlesby was able to get 4 schools on board, signed, sealed, delivered, and ready to go. So it really has been a remarkable timeline to get everything done. And it does, for all the Big 12 jokes that there have been about inaction and infighting, the Big 12 unified and did something aggressive very quickly. So that does certainly deserve to be commended. All right, well, Robert Lipson has some thoughts on that as well, so that will dovetail perfectly here into Robert's World right now on Powercat Game Day.
Respect the streak. Robert's World with K-State superfan Robert Lipson.
Welcome to another edition of Robert's World here on Powercat Game Day. I am John Kurtz, joined by K-State superfan Robert Lipson. K-State taking on Southern Illinois in the 2021 home opener. After beating up Stanford 24-7 in Arlington, Robert, how much fun was it watching K-State win that game?
Thanks for the vine. I first want to open with a couple of quick thoughts. First, on conference expansion, we should have done this a long time ago. Do you remember when Clemson and F State were knocking on the door briefly? We should have brought them in at the time. Imagine what the ACC would look like now, but the covered wagon and the mad cows would have never left if we had brought Clemson in. And also, do you remember when L State was briefly looking at us? That also. Anyway, I want to get to my tailgate schedule for 2021 home games. I will be on the grass and satellite lots only today. I'll start about 3.5 hours before the game. As of right now, you're listening to this, I'm probably on my way. And I'll start at the fire station on Denison and Kimball and go from there all the way to the agronomy lots. And after the game, I'll go to the rec center and see what's left over. So I'll be on the grass and satellite lots today. My next grass will be against Big Sky on October 16th. And next week, I'll be on the east side paved stadium lot only against the Wolfpack. Anyway, it was fun to watch us beat Stanford, our conference versus their conference. Stanford was rebuilding. Remember, their situation now is what we had when Skyler got injured. They're breaking in a brand new quarterback, a patchwork offensive line. I was pleased with the turnout. I thought they were the Wildcats that showed up were very enthusiastic. I heard you mention to me that I was on TV briefly. You'll email that to me and so I could share it with friends.
What stood out to you most about the week of college football outside the K-State game?
Remember I told you last week that expect more surprises and upsets in openers because the teams haven't played in so long that they don't really know what they have to work on no matter how long they practice. That's why there were numerous upsets, close calls, and surprises as always.
All right, Robert, will K-State win this game against Southern Illinois today?
Well, you got to take every team seriously, okay? Every bit as seriously as we would be taking Big Sky or the covered wagon if we were playing them instead today, okay? The single most important thing is you have to keep improving. You have to keep improving at least to keep up with the teams on your schedule. And you have to improve better than and faster than the teams on your schedule do. That'll give you a better chance to do so. Look for significant improvement. And regardless of what happens in the game, if injuries, illness, and luck are not factors in any way or they even out, be pleased not with the win, but that we made significant improvement. That's the most important thing right now, okay?
All right, Robert, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, I want to invite the clones to listen to the game this Monday and every weekday from 4 to 6, unless the Royals are playing, because they'll be talking about conference expansion, the latest you need to know, and everything that pertains to Wildcats. All right, thanks for the Vine. You all have a wonderful decade. Over and out.
Robert's World.
All right, there you have it. Robert's World on Powercat Game Day wraps up hour one of the show. We move on to hour two next as we start with the top three storylines of the week. You're listening to Powercat Game Day.
The game is just the beginning. Get post-game video highlights and exclusive analysis online at PowercatGameDay.com.
When it's time to get back on board, you need to feel safe and secure. From check-in to baggage claim, you'll find more sanitation stations, social distancing, and other flyer-friendly measures to make your next travel experience your best one yet. All with the same shorter lines and closer to home convenience. Fly local, fly safe, fly MHK. Book your travel today at flymhk.com. DeLorean, Boss Hoss, Dragula. See all three and more, part of the stunning display at Midwest Dream Car Collection. With over 60 cars, ranging from early classics to modern supercars, this diverse collection has something for everyone. Stop by the beer wall and pour your own drink at the self-serve taps. Then enjoy your brew as you explore the exhibits. Open every Thursday through Sunday with $8 admission. Located at 3007 Anderson Avenue in Manhattan, next to Powercat Sports Grill. Online at MidwestDreamCarCollection.org.